Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Hey everybody, I'm Steph Orm at Emmanuel College in... I forgot the name of the podcast there for a minute. All right.
This is
every time. I'm having a rough go of it today. I usually make it through the intro just fine.
See, have you played today? I spent 2 hours earning rewards for Broken Fang. My cognition is activated. I was doing Desert Eagle kills in casual hostage situations.
I slept like crap last night. That's why sleep's important. All right.
Yep.
We had that the last one.
I know. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Stephanie Orm from Emmanuel College in Boston in the United States.
And I'm Brian McCauley here at the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, the city of DreamHack. And our guest today has come back. He is Ismael Pedraza Ramirez, who is a PhD student, but also a professional esports performance coach. And today he's here to tell us about what he does for a living, I guess. Ismael, tell us more about what you do for work when you're not researching.
Hi, Steph. Hi, Brian. Thank you again for the invitation. Yes, so I work as well as a practitioner. So I do basically sports psychology counseling with the League of Legends team Rogue. I mean, we are already starting to work as well with the different teams of the organization. So I basically, my kind of official title in the esports scene is performance coach. So I manage many of the aspects of the outside of the game performance. So we're talking about nutrition, exercise, the psychology, relationships. So different areas of performance that are not necessarily inside, like are related to the in-game performance, but it has an influence, a huge influence into the in-game performance. So that's basically, or not that basically, but that's kind of more or less what I do in as a performance coach. So everything from outside the game.
All right. So Ismael, when you were last on the show, we talked about your definition of esports. And so if you can go into a little bit more about what constitutes esports performance, I know you kind of mentioned it's things outside of the game, but maybe what are some examples of that?
Yeah, I think esports performance is like a bigger umbrella, definitely. So I come from a perspective of sports science and performance psychology. So we go more in the direction of different spheres of performance that I think like the classical ones are nutrition, sleep, exercise, and psychology. And then from there, so we're trying to understand at a higher degree how these different spheres of performance influence players' in-game performance. So in Rogue, we are establishing a performance framework, a performance model that we've been testing already with the League of Legends team. And this goes in the direction of trying to have a framework that could be used across different teams from the perspective of how we can understand better the personality of players, how this can influence players' interaction, coach-player interaction, how we can help coaches to develop in the roles, because as well, they have a very, very big role into the in-game performance of the players. So it's all around performance enhancement, but as well, we have to realize that we are trying to put in a higher degree the well-being of the players. So that is here when we are talking about high performance environments, which this is one where I'm working. So we need to try to find the balance between optimizing performance and prioritizing well-being. So by having these spheres of performance, we get to try to find this balance and we try to get the outcomes that an organization like this requires.
Look, this is a podcast designed to break down esports research and also esports, right? And I don't have a clue about League of Legends. I know you have to defeat a dragon as an optional thing to get extra gold at some point after you beat up the little blue or red guys. I've tried. I've had it explained to me. I don't understand it. I've tried. But for anyone who doesn't know, what is Rogue Esports? Who are they? Where is it based? What do they do? What's their success? Tell us about Rogue.
So Rogue is a North American organization. which they are on the umbrella of Red Global. So we have teams in Call of Duty, Rainbow Six, and League of Legends. I forgot one. So basically, we are at the highest level of esports in terms of competitive level. Yeah, basically that's
But who do you work with? Just the League of Legends team, or is this
so? I've been working already a year and a half ago with the League of Legends team, which we compete in the LEC in Berlin. So of course, last year was a very difficult because of COVID, because we are based in Berlin, so all the players are in one place, and then we have to compete as well in a studio in Berlin. So we have like this high, we're a high tier team in the scene, which as well, I mean, I have to say, last year was a very, very good year for us because we achieved going to the World Championship in China, even though we had these issues with COVID, but we have this achievement. So we are competing against the best, and we're trying to become the best, basically.
You mentioned COVID there.
Yeah.
Sorry, but like you mentioned COVID there. What sort of impact has that had on players in 2020?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of these spheres that I mentioned before, so it was, and I think it's very, very important for us from our framework to 2 points, develop a very well understanding of our philosophy and identity based on values. And that means how everyone is moving towards the same goal and being on the same page. And the second part is developing routines and more routines, habits that help the players to be at the highest level in terms of outcomes and performance and development and having a good well-being as a whole. And definitely COVID affected both of these big aspects of our philosophy as Rogue and as organization. So we had to come up with strategies how to cope with this. So we do exercise, physical training. We do specific outside game activities that help players to have better relationship with each other. We have like a very specific structure. Like for example, one of the impactful issues last year was we have to stop competing on a stage to compete from our own gaming room, basically. So we've been setting up our own approach to compete in front of fans, to compete in a very physical, high stress situation, like just being in front of people, cameras, interviews, and all these things. So we had to adapt to just go back to our comfort zone, which is our house, and try to pretend that it has the same influence of having cameras, fan, and everyone around you. So it was very impactful in that sense to try to continue giving the importance of what they're doing, what we're doing. But then at the same time, in an environment where which is very comfortable, which usually when you're in your comfort zone, you are not pushed to try to reach those limits.
I was thinking when you were talking about routine, exactly like you were just describing about trying to create some semblance of getting the players kind of, you know, not too comfortable, right? Because they were playing at home. And you see that in traditional sport, at least here in the US a lot, if someone is playing like a championship game and it's being hosted, you know, at their campus or, you know, on their home field, a lot of times the teams will still go and stay in a hotel or something, right? So that they don't wake up in their own bed and it feels like just another game, right? And so I think that's really interesting because you're in a totally different psychological mindset, right? When you're not competing in that same, like you said, high intensity kind of environment that you would on like the LEC world stage, right? You know, when it is playing from like your team house instead.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think it was a very interesting year because of these challenges, basically. And the important thing maybe for this podcast is that my approach as well is very research evidence or is evidence-based approach, the one that I have. So I am implementing different strategies from research in traditional sports because we don't have much research in terms of theories or practices in esports. This is just what is happening right now, right? We are trying to develop this. And one of these approaches is from a holistic perspective, which means we are considering the macro and the micro environment. That means we consider everyone as a whole, people who are in the house, the building itself, and how this affect the performance of the players. So then we are talking here about adapting, right? We understand what is our comfort, but then at the same time, we need to try to understand how we can move the pieces to try to push each other to not being that comfortable. And this goes into another theory or another approach in terms of a supportive challenge environment. And this, the previous research is from colleagues from Denmark in high performance environments. And this research that I mentioned here is from Henriksen. And this research here about supportive challenge environments will be more about resilience, how we build resilience in our players by giving them some autonomy, giving them support about what they are doing, right? But then at the same time, just finding that challenge situations. And this is where we go with our habits. So for example, esports players don't, many esports players are not used to doing exercise or having a rigorous sleep schedules or doing, I don't know, activation before games or between games. Activation meaning like physical movement, like 2-3 minutes, 5 minutes. So this is a challenge, right? For them, or a challenge about trying to behave according to specific guidelines and values to try to build this culture. So I think this is very important for us at the moment, is trying to reach this gap between theory and practice and see it how it plays, basically.
That 2 or 3, 4 or 5 minute thing, is that get up between games and just move around, have a little dance or something? Is that something I should be doing between games at CSGO to improve my play? Is that something that could apply to me?
Yes, definitely. You mean like doing some jumping jacks or some push-ups before games or between games? Or
Or at my age, just get up out of the chair will be a challenge enough.
Please record this.
I'm 40 in a few months, so like just.
But still, your body is still behaving the same as any other one. So you need some oxygen in your brain as well. So maybe some.
But performance-wise, I mean, are there many people in 40 performing highly in esports? Or, you know, because I've seen a lot of the data and it sort of goes, oh, this game is 22, they peak, this game is 26. Do we have anything apart from Hearthstone where you can kind of compete into your 40s, like at the top level?
Well, I mean, like, for example, Counter-Strike, they have but they have older players than, for example, in League of Legends. This is what you mean, right? In terms of age. And I believe, like, yes, like in terms of cognitive performance, maybe not to the 40s, but you can still push in a little bit. I'm sorry.
So the dream is dead. I'm never going to be a professional CSGO player. That's just like, this is just a bad day. Like, I just
learned. Now we're going through some realism. So yes, like, I think like the issue right now is just how players and teams are practicing in terms of how many hours they put into trying to master skill and how they're actually practicing. So there is not deliberation, let's say, and basically bad habits, right? So that's why I think like we're trying to bring this performance into, or these different spheres of performance into place to prolong their well-being, prolong their careers, and not only prolong them, but help them to reach high highs, right? And I think in terms of research, we have seen these studies about like the peaks for Counter-Strike players are, I think, 23 years old. And like there are two studies, I think 23, 26 or something like that. And for League of Legends, it's a little bit younger. But I mean, we know that that cognitive abilities don't decrease at when you are 22 years old, right? So it is more about how they're practicing and what are their habits basically, or their routines that are affecting this fast decrease of their motor skills and cognitive, or just basically pure burnout.
I think that burnout is such an interesting thing too, right? How much do you deal with player burnout in your job as a performance coach? Is that something that you have already run up against?
Yes and no. I think this is an interesting concept, just because I know there is burnout, and you can tell symptoms of burnout mid end of a long season or a long year season. But the thing is that my approach is more like trying to anticipate this and trying to really decrease the stress. And this goes again into the idea of a supportive challenge environment. So we're challenging them, but then at the same time, we're giving them the tools to keep themselves in balance at the physiological level. So we do lots of these techniques that help to regulate your physiology, like for example, meditation or a slow paced breathing. And we do assessments about this. Exercise is another technique to try to decrease these levels of stress. And so we are implementing different strategies that are helping us to decrease burnout. But then you can tell when players are just like tired, that are just like done with everything. But usually, like the culture that we have bringing in our team is more about trying to anticipate these issues and then at the same time just intervene when is necessary. So I think like trying to have a psychological healthy environment is really important for this burnout. Try to help everyone to understand that, well, we are on the same page, we're on the same situation, and we deal with it together. So this is basically something that helps a lot to avoid it, basically.
I mean, the precision needed in esports as well means that burnout can affect it a lot more. If I'm playing football and I'm playing badly or I'm tired, you know, I'm 100 kilograms, I'll shoulder charge the guy, put him on the ground. You know, I can kick the ball out. You know, I don't have to be top performers to be engaged in the game. But at the high level of esports, and having learned a lot from practicing CSGO about the pixels that you can be off in a movement. I mean, is that something you really, really have to catch, or is that something that you can see from data that a player is approaching burnout?
Yes. I mean, we are not at that level at the moment, at least in League of Legends, as far as I know, as far as how we deal things in Rogue. But definitely you can tell like patterns in terms of decrease of in-game performance. And this is an indicator of a symptom or a potential burnout of a player. But I don't think you need to go that far away by just implementing one of the best strategies, which is observation, and trying to recognize or trying to understand and identify how your players behave on a normal basis, and then you are able to recognize when something is off, right? You need to go into details of your own environment, how, if it's a toxic environment. I feel like esports as a whole is a toxic place. And just because we are not educated enough to help to understand that, well, these esports players, professional players, are already in such a high pressure, they are in such a stressful environment that they not need more, you know, backlash from fans or from outside people into how they perform or what they do. And then as well, they are very young in terms of how to deal with these things. So I think you can have, of course, and we need to develop these performance indicators that I think we talked about it before in the other podcast, to help us to understand when something is off in terms of performance. But then at the same time, looking into the environment, educate our people, and that means everyone in the micro environment, which are coaches, managers, players, in terms of what is burnout, how are good practices in terms of relationships, and even in-game performance in terms of how you are training, and all putting all these pieces together, like you are going to understand a little bit more how to avoid these issues.
I was in Katowice once, and I met some of the management team for one of the top CSGO teams from a European country, and I was just talking to the team manager, and I asked him, so what have you done before this tournament? And he said they were training 16 hours per day for a couple of weeks beforehand. And to me, I mean, I couldn't play a game for fun for 16 hours anymore. And I definitely couldn't do my job for 16 hours. I barely do it for a few hours. I'll edit that bit out. No, but like, where do you stand on this on the level? Because that just sounds insane to me, and sounds like detrimental.
Yeah, no, definitely. This is the thing with esports, that you can practice, you can play without having the pressure of your body can cope more with it. Like in traditional sports, you play soccer, basketball, football, whatever. You play it for maximum, I don't know, 3 hours, you're already there. 2 hours, your body is telling you, I'm so tired. Like, no more, don't give me more. But because esports is such a cognitive type of performance or kind of industry that allows you to basically just push some limits in terms of how much you can practice. But then, and this comes from, I think this comes from let's say from the beginning of esports, how do you used to get better at something, or in terms of expertise, how do you develop expertise? Just grinding, do 12, 15, 20 hours a day. And Korean teams, Asian teams are used to these, or were used to these before. And this is where we're coming to trying to understand sometimes less is more, right? And you need to implement good practices to try to be, to optimize, basically optimize practices to optimize performance. So definitely I disagree with that, this high number of hours put into play, because you can reach the same and maybe even better, probably better than by focusing in some other areas and having deliberate practice than just putting too much hours into trying to get expert at something like this.
I'm trying to learn this lesson myself in my career as an academic all the time, right? Like sometimes taking days off is good, right? So Ismail, I know we wanted to ask about Mental Craft, which is a service that you're involved in, which sounds really interesting. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Mental Craft started 2017. It was the Mental Click, I think. So we changed it a little bit. We give it a twist. And it was basically what put me where I am right now. It started just like an idea with colleagues from our university, my university in Finland, in Jyväskylä, as a way how we can reach or how we can transfer the knowledge that we have from traditional sports in sports psychology to esports. So we started it just as a blog, and then we decided, well, maybe there are some teams, players interested in counseling or in services at the psychological level to optimize performance. And this is basically how everything started. So that was my starting point to esports. We developed this with some colleagues, and we published the website. And then 20 days after, we got contacted by an esports organization called Misfits Gaming. And that's when I started my career as a practitioner in esports. So for now, we are just developing some content. We are restructuring because definitely there is already, I think esports has grown so much in the last 2 years, and this year I feel like it's been a year that has just pushed so much from different levels, and even from the psychological level or from the performance level. We have still some blog posts in there in kind of sharing the experiences that we have in traditional sports as sports psychology. And then we have three colleagues of us who as well deliver service. So as well, it serves as a platform for players and teams who are interested in our services, basically, which are performance coaching, basically.
I could definitely do with some of that in CSGO. Okay, so final question is, we usually ask about future research, and we've already asked you that. So in this one, we're just going to ask you, what are some of your future predictions for esports? What do you see happening in the next year, 2, 10 years, the Matrix in 50?
That's always a tricky question, right? With esports, since we still don't know where we're going. I think I was asking myself a year ago as well, like, okay, what is the future of esports? I don't really know. What I know is that it is developing in the right direction, at least in Europe, as far as I can tell, in terms of organizations are starting to understand the importance of well-being, mental health, and performance as a whole. So basically, I see organizations, and I'm not meaning like only professional organizations, but organizations as a whole, with a more integral approach in how they get into the field of competitive esports. So having amateur leagues, which we have as national leagues or academy leagues. But I think the important part of the development is start integrating even more these other areas of performance that I feel like this is already very aware from many sides in comparison with traditional sports that we took, I don't know, 15 years or more. I don't know. I can't remember how many years to understand that you needed a personal trainer, a physical trainer, fitness trainer, or even that sports psychology might be beneficial for the development of like athletes and players, right? And we are just at this point. And I think we have reached this point already in esports. And I see this just more as a structure approach from different organizations and help to educate everyone in this kind of beautiful environment about how to behave in terms of competition, in terms of the fan bases that we have. And I just believe that it will be more structured in terms of how we're doing this business, basically.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ismail. It's been a pleasure having you a second time on our show. I think the work you're doing is fantastic, and I hope to see lots more from you in the future, and I think we will. So thanks again for joining us. And for everybody who's listening, we will have links to all relevant resources, ways to contact Ismail, learn more about Mental Craft attached to this video. So thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ismail. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.